I would like to give, and since you asked about paper, probably let me give you in a little bit some data. This was from, financial year 2018-19 from the Indian Paper Manufacturers Association. This is the published data based on their survey of their stakeholders, right? What we are looking at is about 18 or, close to 20 odd million tons. And this is pre-COVID, right? And, of course, in the current calendar year, the numbers will actually be lower. But we are looking at about, 20 odd million tons, which is both paper that is produced domestically, pulp, which is imported, or high quality paper, which is imported, and some part of it is exported. So that's the net that we are looking at. What does that mean? What does that translate into? Very, very crude thumb rule, okay? Anywhere between 18 and 20 kgs is equivalent to one tree.
That was right from the middle of this week's episode. Hello and welcome to yet another podcast episode on the Mission Chunya channel. As always, I am here to bring you yet another story and a conversation that will encourage you to do a bit more to live a sustainable lifestyle. This week's topic is all about paper and the work done by Forest Stewardship Council, FSC. But the guest who joins me on the chat is a very passionate storyteller. In fact, his work was recently recognized by the Prime Minister of India, Mr. Narendra Modi, in his monthly broadcast to the nation, Mann Ki Baat. Amar is the country head for FSC in India, and he is also the founder of the Gatha Story. Before we get to the conversation, just want to remind you that the usual action item will be there towards the end of the conversation with Amar. I'm sure you will enjoy every bit until then. Without further ado, here's a feature segment for this week. Hello Amar, welcome to the Mission Chunya podcast.
Agreesh, great to be here. And you can see that I'm stuttering and stammering already. So, I hope that the conversation goes a lot smoother than the beginning.
It definitely will. Amar, as a professional, how's your journey been? Because as a person, you have done a lot of things. You wear multiple hats, do a lot of things in your life. So, how's your professional journey been?
It's interesting, Girish, that you mentioned about me wearing multiple hats. One of the quirky habits that I have is whenever I see a cap or a hat, I put it on for an hour or so and probably just put it away again. And incidentally, as we are speaking right now, I am wearing a hat that we had purchased while we were traveling to Turkey a few years ago. And, that's the hat I am wearing. So under the guise of this hat, my mission today is to have a conversation that will hopefully add value to the listeners of this podcast, right? So that's the mission, I guess. And with that, a little bit about myself. I am the India Country Manager for Forest Stewardship Council, which is based in Germany. It's a nonprofit in the forestry space, both on the forest management and products that come out of forest. I'm sure we will talk more about that as we go along. I am also the co-founder of Gatha Story, along with my wife. We are a podcasting company based right here in Bengaluru. And we have been podcasting for, almost 5 years now. So, our shows are Balgatha, Devgatha, Veergatha, and Fairy Tales of India. And of course, My Kitab, which is on book publishing. But this is not what I started out my career with. I got my master's in construction management from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in the US. Worked in the US for about 6 or 7 years. Moved back to India, worked in construction and real estate development. Did not quite like the way things are being done here, even today in construction, when it comes to labor and environmental regulations mainly, or not adhering to them, I guess. So I decided to take a break from construction. Went to IIM Ahmedabad, got my MBA. Ended up with Schneider Electric in energy consulting space. How to optimize energy in buildings, data centers, along the electrical grid. Those are some of the things that we looked at. A lot of it was theory. And this was back in 2012, 13, 14, thereabouts. Seemed like, very, very slow moving, very frustrating. fast forward to 2020, we probably caught a lot of those developments, which were theory back then, are probably actual solutions or applications available under the IoT umbrella. So that's it. I think after Schneider Electric, I had a stint with Amazon. You know, that's what brought us to Bengaluru from Gurugram. And there I was setting up the warehouses or the fulfillment centers from where you get your merchandise that you order. Back to construction in a way, but very different organization, you know, very different beast to deal with. But it required a lot of travel. In fact, in calendar year 2015, I was in the office only for 15 days out of the entire, 220 odd, whatever working days. So it was affecting, family life. It was affecting health and a lot of other things. So decided to call it quits in 2016, January. We founded Katha Story. A year and a half later, the opportunity from FSC came across. I would also like to talk briefly about how I came to be associated with FSC. So I'm also a LEED accredited professional. So, something like a CA, a chartered accountant for green buildings. We audit and certify and things like that. I had learned about FSC certified wood, more than a decade ago. And somehow that name resonated with me. So around May 2017, there was this, somebody pinged me on LinkedIn and sent me this link saying that, hey, Amar, there's this job profile that looks interesting and you should probably apply for it. As luck would happen, it was actually the last day to apply and the deadline to apply was probably midnight Central European time. That time, my wife, Mrunal, she was working, little away, distant from where we lived. She would come back around 7:30 in the evening. I got this message around 6 o'clock or thereabouts. So I read it. It was a bit exciting, but I sat on it saying that I'm already doing Gatha Story and, I don't really want to divert my focus elsewhere. But once Mrunal came back after dinner, I showed her the link and her only question to me was, you want to do it. Why aren't you applying? and I think that was a strong feedback that, all these years I've been talking about doing something in this space and here is an opportunity and why am I not even applying, let alone, converting the role, converting and you I accepting and things like that. And I was very clear. I was very, very blunt saying that I do not come from the forestry background. In fact, I come from construction, which is probably the biggest culprit, or the biggest consumer of the products that come out of forest, right? But these are my thoughts and these are my opinions, right? That is another thing to say about FSC as an organization that, they are open to these conversations, right? They are willing to engage and entertain an absolute outsider, hear their views, and maybe either adapt them, tweak them, or reject them, right? But it's not an outright rejection that you are an outsider. Sorry, we cannot entertain. And here we are. And incidentally, today, I complete 3 years with FSC. So, I'm as excited to talk about it today as I was, I guess, the day I joined, Kirish.
Wonderful. Oh, that's a phenomenal journey, Omar, I should say, like quite diverse. I feel like I justified what I said when I said that you wear multiple hats and you've definitely spent a lot of time doing various activities and probably been successful in all of them. And I must tell all the listeners that Gatha Stories, usually all the podcasters in India call that a network of podcasts because you run a host of shows and host of successful shows. So that's great work. Keep it going. And yes, your work in FSC is something that we are going to talk about. Paper is something that we haven't spoken about in detail in the podcast so far. So it's a good opportunity to talk about this industry because it's an essential resource, but whatever is happening in forest destructions, be it for varied reasons, is really catastrophic. So can you give us some numbers on what percentage of forests that are destroyed go in for paper making?
Interesting question, though I would like to put a slight amendment to that question, if that's okay with you, Girish.
Sure.
So I would like to expand it to paper, timber, and packaging. And I'll tell you why. Because all these three industries are directly dependent on the trees that are harvested from the forest. So, I should say trees plus bamboo, but anyway. So I would like to give, and since you asked about paper, probably let me give you in a little bit some data This was from financial year 2018-19 from the Indian Paper Manufacturers Association. Yeah, so this is the published data based on their survey of their stakeholders, right? What we are looking at is about 18 or close to 20 odd million tons, and this is pre-COVID, right? And of course, in the current calendar year, the numbers will actually be lower. But we are looking at about 20 odd million tons, which is both paper that is produced domestically, pulp which is imported, or high quality paper which is imported, and some part of it is exported. So that's the net that we are looking at. What does that mean? What does that translate into? Very, very crude thumb rule. Okay, anywhere between 18 and 20 kgs is equivalent to one tree. Yeah. So for those who are mathematically inclined, they can probably translate that into number of trees. Okay. And I use that that number with a caveat, because if it's a younger tree, a species that grows faster, it's taller, skinnier tree versus a tree that's been around for much longer, and a lot of variables in that. But just go with that. For sake of our discussion. Now, interestingly enough, paper is not the main cause of forest cover being lost. Agriculture is.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately or unfortunately, not a lot of people talk about it and use that as one of the primary factors. Timber harvesting is certainly, construction, furniture, so on. Incidentally, Government of India recently has allowed a use of timber harvested from forest again in public buildings. There was a cap, there was a ban on it for a certain number of years. Again, without getting into specifics, the demand for timber will increase because of that. So that will continue to be the main responsible party among the industries. When we're talking about paper, wood and bamboo combined account for about 25% of the overall volume. So, they're not the major contributor. Waste paper and recycled paper actually accounts for close to 60% or three-fifths of the overall paper production, right? Rest of it will be agricultural residue, bagasse coming from sugarcane and, wheat straw and things like that, right? India, incidentally, imports a lot of paper. A few years ago, there was a huge dependence on newsprint. There was recycled pulp coming in largely from Eastern European or CIS countries and so on. The domestic paper production over the past 10 years has grown three times. Okay, and I guess I'll be happy to send you across the links that you could probably add in the show notes. I'll not throw numbers just for the sake of numbers, but I'll probably talk in the absolute. The dependence on imports actually first doubled between 2010 and 2017, and then it dropped, and it's probably at close to that levels today, right? So this is the long and short of the paper industry in India. And if you were to classify it a little bit further, we're looking at paper used in newsprint, paper used for specific industries. So there could be banking and financial services. There could be security paper, right? That's your stamp papers, or to a very small extent, of course, currency notes and things like that, right? So special paper, you got for printing, whatever you use in your office space and so on, right? So those are the, and of course, notebooks and textbooks, yeah? And that's the reason why I mentioned earlier that this calendar year, the production's gone down because, obviously, the schools and education is going online. Coming to packaging, great push on sustainable packaging by the regulators as well as adoption by the industry, right? In fact, I just got a package. It was a HDMI cable to connect my laptop to my monitor. It came in a plastic, and it actually had like a paper sheet attached to it saying that, we are focusing on minimal packaging now. And that paper was, that packaging paper was most likely recycled. Yeah. So, which is great. I mean, I think a lot of things are moving in the right direction. It is not moving in the right direction in terms of timber. We import a lot of it from Southeast Asia as well as from Central Africa. Some of it is through the formal channels. A lot of it is not. And I'll probably stop at that because that's a whole new conversation in itself.
Oh, those are really interesting numbers. I'm sure, as you said, I'll include the links to the numbers because those are really interesting stats that you don't get it in one place. And you summed it up really well. Now, generally, the question that people would rightly have is, paper seems to be a material that's been recycled for a long time, but still the idea that we import a lot of paper in India Is that due to the demand being like significantly outgrowing the supply?
That is one, obvious or, you know, a logical answer in this case. I think logical being more obvious, more appropriate than obvious, I guess. The other reason is that there were many state-run newsprint mills. So I was in high school, probably in the 90s. In geography textbook, they used to teach that, you know, where the newsprint mills are in India. You know, there was a big one, government-run, at a place called Nepanagar, I believe. It's in Madhya Pradesh, was in Madhya Pradesh. I don't know if it still is in the sense, you know, is it in Chhattisgarh or not? But anyway, coming to the point, a lot of these mills have closed down. The private ones are focused more on other categories of paper, right? So again, like I mentioned before, it could be for paper that is that goes. In fact, some of it would be specialty paper for food products, right? All the Tetra Paks that you get your juices in, for example. Obviously, the margins are higher there. That's a category that's growing higher. So the focus has moved away, I guess. That is one reason. The other reason is that, where you source the raw material for newsprint, for example, right? Earlier on, it was cheaper to import, and that's why the import volumes went up. And then suddenly, the regulator, as well as a few other, I guess, influencers and decision makers realized that's actually a drain on the foreign exchange. So, you know, that was probably one of the reasons for the dip. So that's the one of the reasons. I would also like to talk a little bit about the textbook part. Okay, there was a huge import of textbooks and storybooks and comic books from the CIS countries, the former Soviet Union republics, right? About 4 or 5 years ago, and this happens in cycles. I was actually talking to a gentleman who was probably in the government service, active service, a bureaucrat in the early 80s. And this person told me situation was no different. You know, so India used to import lots of textbooks and comic books and things like that from the Soviet Union. So there could be some, historical legacy reasons for this to happen. Okay. Not just demand and supply and price. So there could be some certain other variables which I haven't honestly gotten into.
That's really interesting, especially the angle of importing because of a legacy issue. Now, Amar, now looking at particularly what FSC does, how did FSC actually begin? What is the origin story of FSC? And if probably one success story of FSC in India or globally that you have on top of your mind?
Again, interesting set of questions. I will probably try and answer them as concisely as possible, because the story of how FSC was formed is a story in itself. So FSC, or Forest Stewardship Council, actually was formed in the mid-90s, around 1994. It is, those who are in the financial services sector might be familiar with the term fund of funds, right? So FSC is actually an NGO of NGOs and other stakeholders, right? It has a very unique structure in the sense that it's completely membership-driven organization. And then there is an executive body which actually implements the agenda or the strategy which is approved by the membership or the governing board in general, right? So in that sense, it's a very, very unique organization. It's as distributed as, loose a network one can think of. At the same time, some of the earlier supporters were the Worldwide Life Fund for Nature, the WWF, and a few other organizations. And of course, over the years, there has been churn. Some organizations have moved on, others have joined in. And then there are three principal buckets, or three chambers, as FSC likes to call it, who actually constitutes the membership body. And the members could be individual or corporates or organizations and institutions, right? But largely, they belong to one of the three chambers, which would be social, economic, and environmental. And that's the other unique part about FSC, that every governing body, every decision has to be taken by equal representation from each of the three chambers. So that, we call it chamber balance, so that there is no bias towards one at the cost of another, right? All the decisions are taken through intense level of debates, discussions. It's a very slow moving beast. That's one of the downsides of it. But the upside is the decisions are taken, taking in multiple factors into account, and that's how it is, right? in terms of the forestry space, and not because I represent FSE, but one of the reasons why I joined FSE, by the way, was in terms of sustainable forestry standards, it's at the very top. You know, it doesn't get more complex, more comprehensive, but at the same time, more resilient than that. Yeah. There are 10 guiding principles. So when we're talking about the resources coming out of a forest, first thought comes to mind is timber and, honey and things like that. But what about the people? What about the animals? What about tree species that may be unique or, they are endangered? So red sanders, for example, right, in this region. That, FSE, there are 10 principles. They very clearly list out the do's and don'ts, saying that you have to comply with these standards for you to be associated with us. So I think over the years, trying to implement them universally has been a challenge. It may not, it's not a one-size-fits-all situation, of course. But the thing is, it is as, global and as comprehensive as possible. Yeah, that's about, FSE. You asked about success for FSE, either globally or in India. Let me give you an example about the success in terms of, number one, large brands that support FSE. Okay, it's a who's who out of the Fortune 500. We've got McDonald's, Kimberly-Clark, there is IKEA, H&M being some of the brands that support, Tetra Pak, of course. And I do not want to, mention a few brands at the cost of others. Every brand has supported, and within India, it's Aditya Birla Group, for example. They all have really invested their resources. It's not just monetary investment, but it's also the executive time. It's also the involving their incorporating FSE approaches into their global strategies. And some of them have gone ahead and declared it in their annual reports or to the stock market, saying that our compliance with FSE would be a certain percentage, by within a certain timeline, right? So that's a success, industry adapting it, large brands really supporting it, and they have actually influenced this message down their value chains. So we get a lot of inquiries in India from suppliers who actually supply to some of these brands, either domestically or internationally, saying that my customer wants me to go ahead and get the FSE certificate. How do I go about it? So this pull coming in rather than a push, especially in this market, who having to go out and reach out to the small and medium enterprises and asking them to make this investment. And again, it's not just financial, right? For them, it'll be documentation. It'll be actually an audit of their processes. It'll be a lot of rethink on their part from the way they have been doing things, right? It requires transparency. It's a mindset change that is required. And I'm really glad that there is a pull happening. And fortunately, I don't really have to go out and knock on doors of offices saying that, would you like to go ahead and get the certification, metaphorically speaking.
That's good. In a market where there is pull, and it's a good market to work on, I'm sure you're in a good position where there is a lot of people who are approaching you to get certification. Now, if you look into the certification process, can you briefly give us an overview of how the certification process works?
I'm sure many in the audience, and you included, would be familiar with the ISO series of certifications, right?
Yeah.
So there is a body called the International Standards Organization who actually holds the IP, or they develop these standards. They promote these standards. Adoption is done by individuals or organizations or businesses. The actual auditing and the certification is done by auditors, right? Or in FSE parlance, we call them certification bodies. So FSE as a process is very similar in this nature. So FSE has, largely two sets of certifications or two sets of standards. One is for management of forests. So in the Indian context, it will be largely dealing with the state forest departments or even at the central government level, right? So that is the forestry management or FM certification. And I like to call it more as the supply side certification, right? Because that's where the supply of raw material is coming from. Then we have the demand side or the certification by the processors, the traders, the packagers and the end users, right? So the downstream side is called the COC or chain of custody certifications. And this is what I like to call as the demand side, because this is where the demand for the certified raw material, the pulp, the timber, etc. is coming from, right? So, depending on the nature of your business, and again, first of all, you have to, let me take a step backwards and say, within India, our focus is on timber, paper, packaging, rubber, and textiles, largely speaking. And of course, there are other like handicrafts, and there could be certain unique ones. Recent months, a lot of startups in the sustainable, female hygiene products, or pre-COVID again, people importing latex from EU and selling mattresses in India. These are the kind of organizations who are actually looking for the certification, because then they can go ahead and publish that on their packaging. And then, that's what helps them A, differentiate, B, probably help, command a premium compared to the competition, right? The process is actually very compartmentalized. We don't involve ourselves in the auditing process or even the selection of the auditor process. So to give an example from the Mahabharat, right? When, Jayadrath had to be killed, and he had to be killed before sunset, and, Krishna then goes ahead and does what, his godly things. And finally, Jayadrath is standing right there, and Krishna says, this is son, this is the Jayadrath, this is Jayadrath, go ahead and kill him, right? Similarly, our job is that, this is the certification body, and, this is the company. And by no means I'm trying to imply I'm Krishna, by the way. But the logic is this, the arm's length distance part, saying that we have a list of frequently asked questions. So if there was to be an inquiry coming in, saying that we are looking for FM or FSC certification, how do we go about it? So there's a frequently asked questions that's sent across to them, along with the list of the certification bodies. The company in turn contacts the certification body, the financial transaction is done between them, and we get reported at the end of the process whether the company received the certification or not. So that's kind of, that works very well, has its pluses and minuses. But I think in our experience, it has more pros than cons. And that's the reason why we've probably followed this process so far.
That's very good to know. There are a lot of pros than cons. We spoke about all the good things of how the system works and how it even follows and how big brands adopt to sustainable practices and we sustainable forestry and everything. But I'm sure there are stories where forests are just destroyed in an unsustainable way. What's your take on that?
Sure. So in fact, before that, what hurts us equally, and I'm talking more about as an, not just as an organization, but also as an emotional investment, right? What really hurts us is a forest department who has gone ahead and received a forest management certification, they go ahead and decide to cancel it overnight. And we had that happen this year. Unfortunately, nearly 90% of the forestry area in India, which was under the FM certification, which had received FM certification, overnight, all these certificates got cancelled for, for a variety of reasons, which I shall not like to get into, right? That hurts, that really hurts, because the reason is that, and I'm not saying that the forests that are not certified are harvested or logged in unsustainable manner. And conversely, I'm also not making any, giving any assurances or making any claims right now on this call that a forest with a forest management certification, everything will be kosher, right? That is where the audits, that's where the transparency, that is where the chain of custody, those are the checks and balances that are built in to ensure compliance, right? Now, coming back to the question that you had asked, that, the unsustainable either felling of trees or conversion of forest zones into paid for mining or things like that, right? Those are bigger issues that probably require a collective to work together. And an FSC has been a part of some conversations, in the Asia Pacific region. And Government of India, I think it's still under review. They have a new forest policy. So we actually went ahead and gave our feedback to it, to this particular policy. There are, depending on which side of the argument you are at, there are certain clauses in there which say that private sector companies can go ahead and have plantations within forest zones, and some are in favor of it, others are not. there are policies from government of India, state governments in Maharashtra and Karnataka. It's called a land pool policy. So if you've got barren land, a collective of farmers comes together, they go ahead and plant and, actually convert that barren land into a forest. We like that. But unfortunately, in terms of scale and size, that's very minor compared to the converse, which we typically hear more and more about, right? Large-scale filling of trees, conversion, water supply or a dam project coming in, forest getting submerged and things like that. These are issues which, again, within the FSC network, and India has about 32 members. We would love to have a lot more given the size of the country. But that's where the membership also plays an active role. They bring up some of these issues, or they go ahead and represent or speak on behalf of us at such forums, right? There is also the regulatory, surprises that come in sometimes, right? I spoke about the cancellation of the forest management certification. Similarly, a few years ago, Government of India declared that bamboo is a grass. Technically and logically, it is. And therefore, all the land or the forest land that was under FM certification but had primarily bamboo, all of that certification disappeared overnight.
Wow.
That also hurt us in a way because the organizations had made investment. They followed, adhered to the best practices. And it's not just the, tree cover that is going away. Again, you're talking about animals, bird species. You were talking about the people over there. A lot of things get affected by such decisions that have a big impact. Fortunately or unfortunately, that's been the case in many countries. So what we are trying to do, and on the plus side, there have been certain regulations or certain regimes that actually are in very much in line with what, our philosophy or what we stand for. So it's a mixed bag. I would say overall between 1994 and now, I think there have been more pluses than minuses. But if we calculate the scale, I'm talking about data points, right? More pluses than minuses. I think in terms of scale, the minuses outweigh. Unfortunately, it's again, it's a journey. We can't really take. And actually, let me take a pause here and talk about the FSC's roadmap. The goal is to have 200 million hectares of forest along, worldwide certified. That's a huge amount of forest cover we are talking about. India, unfortunately, less than 1 lakh hectares right now. Okay, long way to go for us. So what you do is you pull up your socks and probably just scale up your ambitions to counter some of these issues, right? And probably that takes the debates, that takes the fight, and I mean that in a good way, that takes the fight to a different level or a different forum, and it probably changes the arena altogether, right?
Before I get to the point where you're talking about the scale factor and what's happening in India at this point in time, I want to reemphasize that. I like the way you put it. Cutting down trees is just not for the material that it provides. It's also for the ecosystem that it supports, for the various species associated with the forest. It's a good thought. I'm sure a lot of people, when probably listen to forest, just think of the resources that we get, but not of the entire ecosystem. So that's one good point. Now, because we have spoken about the current situation in India, I don't know if I don't ask this question now, probably listeners will probably feel it wasn't a justified conversation because recently there's been a lot of debate going on around the new draft policy on the environmental impact. Also, the other thing is that India in its INDC has pledged to have a good amount of carbon sink. Now, as an industry observer, or an agency like an FSC, where do you see things in place? Does the new draft policy and the other actions that the government is doing, does it align with it plans to have a big carbon sink by 2030? Do you think there is an alignment in the way the plan and everything is put forward?
I would like to answer this question in two parts. Okay, one is my own personal opinion when it comes to the whole carbon space, and I'll answer that later. Girish, I would like to talk a little bit about the area of managed forests. And it's an interesting space because, FSC does have the FSC FM certification. But when you talk to foresters in India, from the forest department, the first question they would come up with is, we already have a forest management plan. We've been doing that for decades. What new can you offer to us? Right? So whether we like to hear this or not, the fact is that it is mandated by the law that forests in India, the state forest or the central forest, they have to have a management plan. Now, what does forest management plan entail? Probably it will talk about where the harvesting should happen, which are the critical zones, the core areas, as they say, which are the endangered species, patrolling the from the day-to-day minutiae to the high-level, probably strategic stuff that goes on, right? In case, how shall I put it? It may or may not be as comprehensive as FSC would like it to be, right? It may be excellent for the local context. It may be excellent from the regulatory context. And again, one of the debates that we have or discussions we have with the foresters is, foresters say, we follow the law of the land. And, from FSC, the feedback is, absolutely, even FSC, the first principle is follow the law of the land. But then the question is, can we, do something above and beyond, right? So what would a managed forest entail in terms of FSC? Number one, if it is a plantation, it should not be a plantation that has come up at the cost of a native forest. You fell down, you clear out a forest and go ahead and have a plantation of, rubber or, whatever other tree species that you want. It should not be monoculture harvesting in the sense a single species is being grown and, that's all you're doing because that's not ecologically right, right? You should not be harvesting just one area. You could probably draw a grid and then every few years or every few months, keep rotating the area where the logging is happening. Logistically, it may be difficult. Financially, it may be more expensive, but that's the right way to do it. You can't go ahead and randomly start culling trees as the trees mature, right? Those are some of the basics. Now, when you are also talking about the human element, there is the element of are you involving the local community? Have you displaced them by your activities in the forest? Or if you are employing them, are you paying them fair wages? Which is a big topic in India, right? There is a disparity in wages when it, across the genders. So those are some of the elements that go into the managed forest space. There is also the softer element, right? Some trees have religious, cultural values. Some trees have local geographical, geological significance. I'm sorry, not geological, but geographical significance. They are only found in a particular part of the country. The rubber trees, for example, in Meghalaya, from which the living root bridges are made. Very unique to that particular ecosystem. So, either protection, enhancement, things like that, that also forms a part of the forest management. That's the way, we view it. May not be 100% applicable, may not be 100% accurate. In fact, I believe if you speak to a forester from the, state forest departments, they may have a different answer. But I think it's just a matter of perspective and, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to that. The other part is, as far as FSC is concerned, there are, again, the situation was that it's 100% in line with what we stand for or what we would like to see. Unfortunately, that's not the case. There are some plus points. What we also like is that beyond one or two ministries, driving the whole forest or the green cover space, there are other government agencies who are also coming into it, right? So the moment we think of forest, we think of State Forest Department or Ministry of Environment, Forest and Climate Change in Delhi, right? But if you're talking about greening along the highways, and there are plans, massive plans of tree plantation or greening green belts adjacent to the highways, right? Suddenly that's a green cover that is not existing today, but probably could about 10 years from now. The issue here or the concern here that I have or we have are the tree species which are being planted. Are they the right for the local environment? Okay. There are a few species. In fact, particularly in southern India along the railway line, you would find eucalyptus and a few other species planted in, massive numbers. The question to ask is that the right species for the environment or the ecosystem? Because is this tree drawing more water than it is, is it actually, depleting the water table rather than adding to it? Is it turning the soil to acidic or alkaline? Is it causing, is the fragrance or the odor from the tree causing the, causing a nuisance or, an allergy to the birds and the birds are actually migrating away because of the smell, right? These are the questions that need to be thought about. That's the first point. Secondly, typically in the large-scale tree plantation programs, the survival ratio is very poor. So for every 100 trees planted, probably 5 of them would see maturity. Okay, it's not all because of negligence and, what season of the year you're planting the trees in, what species you're planting, are you watering them correctly, are you protecting them correctly, do cattle come and eat up the leaves and, are there other wild beasts coming up and ripping out the trees from the roots and, saplings and things like that, right? So that's the other part, that you set a goal to plant, 100 million trees or 200 million trees. What are you doing to, what's your management plan for it? How are you going to ensure that they would survive and grow into healthy, mature trees, 10 or 15 years from now? Or, if it's a native species which requires 50 years, what's your 50-year management plan for that particular tree species, right? The other part is that what is your thought process about it? I spoke about this land pooling part a few, few minutes ago, right? The question is, I'm a landowner. I plant a tree and probably after 15 years, it'll get harvested for either timber, paper or packaging like we spoke about earlier. But for next 15 years, I'm not making any money from that tree. In fact, I have to invest to protect it and, everything else that goes in it, to water it and prune it as required. And, it may have weed, it may have insects, infestation, whatnot, right? A lot of things, it's a life, it's a living being, a lot of things can go wrong. Instead, why not actually go ahead and come up with a plan that who is the end user of this tree once it's felled 15 years from now? Is it a furniture company? Is it a paper mill? Is it a pulp company or a packaging company? Why can't they go ahead and be a financial partner in this today, which A, gives them, material assurance, B, gives, so that's a supply chain assurance, B, everything is going to be done, or most of the things are going to be done ethically, transparently and things like that. So there is supply chain integrity, which is there, right? And for the farmer, they're getting something today, maybe at a discounted rate compared to getting nothing today and something tomorrow, which you can't define today.
It's a good way that you're put into it. It has to be an integrated assessment or integrated planning. Like, as you said, if someone needs the resource 15, 20 years later, they should probably join hands with the people who are planting trees and managing the forest up to then. So that's a good way. Incidentally, as we speak, I kind of was reminded about the statement made by the Prime Minister of India in the address as well. He said, planning shouldn't be in silos, but everyone has to do it in an integrated way. So probably even generating carbon sinks and managing forests should also be an integrated approach. So Omar, we spoke about a lot of things, but on a final note, people, generally listeners would want to know, what can they do? Of course, they buy books, they buy paper, they obviously see the FSC label. What else can they do to support this cause?
Again, that's a very excellent question. And I would like to answer that probably in two different ways, right? Number one is as a consumer, like you said before, the papers, the Tetra Paks, well, or the packaging in general, and so on, right? There also, there are brands which actively support. And in the show notes, probably I'll add the link for the place where you can find the database of organizations which actually are FSC certified, largely in the consumer space, or be it plywood companies, furniture companies, paper companies, and so on. So that would be one way that, again, the investment or the focus of the organization towards doing things in a more sustainable manner is rewarded in financial terms, or in terms of consumer loyalty at the end of the day, right? That is one. Second, again, as a consumer, it need not be a business to B2C relationship, right? You as an individual could be in a influencing position in the sense of be a part of a purchase committee within your organization, your residence welfare association, for example. When we're talking about consumables, paper in the office space, tissues, cleaning supplies, and things like that, look for brands which are supporting FSC. So that's another way that at an institutional, corporate, organizational level, you can probably influence if you're not the decision maker, in these matters. And then, of course, there is the topic that will come up with is the price versus, you know, the non-branded versus non-labeled versus labeled, the price difference between the two. But that's the next step of the conversation. I think the beginning step is, are we even aware? And let me give you a personal example. 3 years ago, I wanted to buy a FSC certified notebook. On Amazon, I did end up buying it, but it was made in Italy.
Wow.
No Indian notebook manufacturer made an FSC certified notebook. 3 months ago, unfortunately, situation was no different. So we spoke about success. For me, that's a personal challenge and a frustration that, you know, why has the needle not moved in the 3 years? Right? So can the schools who buy in bulk, can the institutions who buy office stationery in bulk, they go ahead and demand that this is the paper, this is the, you know, this is the certification that I need. Otherwise, we're not going to buy from you, which will probably help move the needle, right? Now, let me also talk about individual taking a more active role beyond, you know, beyond, you know, spending money or being an advocate or a consumer, right? I mentioned about membership for FSC. FSC has a very straightforward, you know, process for becoming a member. You need references from two of the existing members. There's a form that you have to fill up based on your background, you know, educational, professional background, etc. You would become a member of one of the three chambers, economic, environmental, or social. And that's where you can interact with your peer group, you know, understand from them, learn from them, and probably take the message back to your stakeholders or, you know, your environment, your office space, and so on and so forth. That would be another way, because in every interaction that I have had with FSC members, you know, some of them are retired forest officers themselves. There is one who actually represents a workers' trade union. There are some members who are retired professors, and somebody, you know, even taught at the Indian Institute of Forestry Management, right? You got people with hands-on experience. Talking to them would really, you know, add tremendous value and actually help you think more in a structured, logical way as to how, you know, they can contribute for and make an impact.
That's wonderful. The second part is really interesting. Getting more knowledge about this and getting more information about this process is definitely a valuable takeaway in addition to what, as a consumer, we can probably emphasize on some requirements when we buy. So
I would just like to add one more part to this, Kirisha. So because of COVID, so every 3 years, there is something called as a general assembly that happens, which is like literally a Kumbh Mela of all the members and all the stakeholders and supporters of FSC. They all come together. We're talking about like thousands of people who converge. That's the opportunity to again interact, debate, you know, meet and greet and things like that, right? Develop your network in this with like-minded people in this space. The event was scheduled to happen in Indonesia later this year, which because of COVID and other reasons, actually got moved to second half of next year. So that would be another opportunity for any member, anyone who joins as a member now, to actually be a part of that general assembly. And again, you know, learn, interact, meet and greet, probably form opinions, probably, you know, change their opinions as the case may be. But most importantly, bring back the message, you know, that I think would be a great opportunity as well. So that is another way that individuals can contribute and support.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a session where a lot of myths could be busted. So a lot of people would probably actively participate in such sessions. So hopefully it's a successful event when it happens next year. Amar, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast and have this great conversation with you. I mean, you are an expert and cited very good examples, and it was a fantastic conversation. Thanks for taking time to be on the podcast.
Well, thanks so much for this opportunity. And, you know, it is certainly a pleasure talking. So I've been a listener of Mission Junior. In fact, I think we had a conversation when you were about to launch, right? Some time back.
Yes.
You know, here we are nearly a year and a half later. So you obviously have had some great guests. And what I noticed personally was that the space that we spoke about, that conversation had not happened. And, you know, that's why I just reached out to you, and thanks so much for agreeing to have me on this show and talk about the things that you know, that I do and things that excite me.
And that was the episode for this week. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and became more aware of how FSC certification works and how forests can be sustainably managed, and a lot more about the humble paper. Amar as a person is a passionate storyteller, and you would have figured that while he mentioned the story from Mahabharata, a classic Indian masterpiece. You can follow his other passion project on the podcast by searching for Gatha Story on any platform that you're listening to this on. The links to connect with Amar are in the show notes section of this episode. And more information about FSC and the references made during the conversation will be available on the website missionjunior.com, so you don't miss out on that. As always, your feedback is appreciated. You can do that by sending an email to missionjunior@gmail.com or tag missionjunior. The handle is @missionjunior across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Finally, hope you have subscribed to the podcast, because I'll be back in 2 weeks' time with yet another podcast episode. And if you like the show, do give a rating, write a review, or share it with friends and colleagues. It just takes about 30 seconds to share the episode link with 3 people in your network. So please consider doing that. And with that, signing off, this is Girish Shivakumar, and as always, thank you for listening.